Welcome to Tee Talk, the golf podcast brought to you by Flagstaff.com. My name is Stefan Tiedorf. Let's bring in the boys. Scotty, how's it going?
Good. How are you this week, man?
I'm all right. Let's bring it over to producer Nick. Nick, you got your night coffee. What's going on?
Night coffee is done.
Nick, you get a chance to watch a lot of the golf this weekend?
No.
All right. Well, let's bring it over to Scotty. Scotty, WGC just finished up. How much golf did you get to watch this weekend?
I caught a little bit on Sunday. Obviously, DJ was doing his thing, going to get his 20th win, so I was paying attention to that. I watched a fair bit. How about you?
I love this tournament. I thought it was very entertaining. We actually have a great guest on, and we'll talk about that in a second, that was actually at the tournament. And I love the golf course. It's way different than you see in the past. It's a nice, tight golf course, which I thought was different. You know, you see tee shots, and you're like, whoa, that almost looks like Augusta at times, the shoot they have to go through. And I love how far the guys were hitting it. You got Rory driving a par four that was 300 plus yards with a 3-iron. You got Justin Thomas driving a 415 yard par four and 3-jacking it for a nice par.
But he went from being unhuman to human
fast. It was real quick. He looked like a tour pro and then like me real quick. I loved it. I thought it was a great tournament. It was entertaining from start to finish. And whenever you can see Dustin Johnson on his game, it's must-see TV.
Well, think about that. Dustin Johnson, Rory McIlroy, two guys that are amazing with a driver off the tee. It makes fans pay attention. It really does. And I should point out here, if you play back and go back to one of the early podcasts, I think Rory was my pick, believe it or not. So I was watching for that reason as well.
So if anybody took Scott's bet, you lost your money. But we'll do Scott's gambling sessions later or something. Maybe it'll be a new section of the pod. I mean, let's talk about Dustin Johnson for a second. There's always that talk of if everybody's on their game, they're at the top of their game, who should win every week? And when he's at his best, I don't see anybody that should be able to beat this guy. He's just that good.
I mean, you've got those two guys right at the top for that conversation. And obviously, DJ, 12 years in a row. Not many people have done that. It's a very, very small list that have won 12 years in a row or 12 seasons in a row on the PGA Tour. He's done it at a very young age. And, you know, right now he's at 12 years, I believe, in tour membership. He's got 3 more years left and he'll be at 15 seasons. And with 20 wins, that gives him a lifetime membership. So he's in a small category as it is. And obviously from a skill level, like you say, when this guy is on, he just destroys the field. He really does.
So what does a lifetime membership actually get you?
A lifetime membership. You get access to
You pick any tournament you want.
Well, there's some limitations, obviously, when you deal with some of the majors and so forth. I'd have to look at the full details of it, but it puts you in a category where, basically you can play whatever you want to play. And the biggest thing is it doesn't put a restriction on you as far as playing a number of tournaments per year, whereas right now players have to play a certain number to keep their membership. And also with the new rule that's in place where players have to add new events in their schedule every few years, he's exempt from that as well, or will be exempt from that. I mean, like I said, he's got 3 more years left before he actually gets that that lifetime membership.
So though he's reached 20 wins already, his career's still in its early stages, you could say. He's under 35 still. He's got a lot to go, a lot in the tank, and the length of his swing, obviously, you know, it's going to set him up for a long career. Do you actually believe, though, he's reached his potential at this point with all that talent? That's always the take, is that you almost always want more out of DJ.
Yeah, I think everybody does, but he might want more out of himself, too. It's really hard to tell. I mean, he's a guy who...
I mean, I feel like he's...
Well, that's the perception. Most people think that, you know, maybe he doesn't care, or he just kind of saunters down there. But, you know, I think there's maybe more going on there than people think. Dustin, at 20 wins, the issue is... how long is a player going to stay motivated out there? I mean, you know, when you're talking about 80 wins for Tiger, you know, do you see a Dustin Johnson staying out there for a long enough time to get 80 wins?
No, but I think the craziest...
Or is he capable of 80 wins?
I don't think so. I don't see him as a guy that's going to, you know, when he's 45, still grinding it out a full tour schedule like Phil. The number 80, if you actually think about that for a second.
Oh, it's It's hard to fathom.
Like, you were at an age where obviously you remember the amount of times Tiger winning. When DJ's winning 4 or 5 times a year, I believe it's like, oh, he's won again. I couldn't even imagine what it was like when Tiger was winning every other week.
Well, think about this. DJ, I would have to look now. I mean, he's won this WGC 3 times. I think for the number of WGCs...
He's won them all. Well, each one, right. Yeah.
But for the number that he's won, I think he's still 12 WGCs behind Tiger.
It's insane.
12.
Wow.
It's insane.
12. I mean, that's... I mean, one WGC is a career. 12 wins is near Hall of Fame in some cases for some players. So, and yeah, as you said, you weren't really around watching golf as much when Tiger was really in his prime, but you look at those seasons and it's hard to fathom how anybody could possibly do that again. I mean, the potential is there. I'm not saying nobody's ever going to be, I mean, nobody ever thought anybody would even come near what Jack Nicklaus did. And for Tiger to do what he's done is obviously pretty impressive. So I think it just stands out by itself, though. I think the money's too big as well. I don't think players, you know, they're going to be comfortable after a certain while. What's their motivation to stay out there for 80 wins?
That's true. And I think the way that Dustin, when he's on, what sets him apart from everybody else, and it's obvious, is he drives the golf ball further than anyone. He drives it straighter than anyone. And that's kind of what I saw over the weekend, was just him crushing it. He's either got a chip beside the green on a par four, or he's got a flip wedge into a par four. He was hitting, I believe he hit an 8-iron into a par five at one point. It's just, it's unfair for other people, but that's the game. But what it gets us into is that constant conversation, that constant gets brought up, is does the golf ball go too far? Are they hitting it too far? Are we going to lose all these great courses because the ball goes too far and these guys are too good? And what is your take on this? Because I think that's nonsense.
Well, for me, you know, the professional game is a game of entertainment.
Yep.
And until they start, you know,
let's pause. The golf is a game of entertainment.
Well, for sure. Yeah. I shouldn't just say professional. I mean, people are there to enjoy themselves. Mm-hmm. Generally, that's the way it is. But if we're talking about the professional game, I mean, you know, once NBA players started dunking all over the place, they didn't start moving the nets. You know, it was still 10 feet.
Yeah.
They weren't moving it to 12. They weren't moving to 14. Sure, there was talk about it. Said, oh, well, you know, the players are bigger, stronger, faster. You know, it's too short. I mean, at one point, you weren't even allowed to dunk. But when we talk about the professional golf, I mean, first of all, who's it hurting? I mean, yes, they start talking about, you know, golf courses and having to expand classic golf courses. What's the percentage of people that it's actually affecting?
And what does it matter if they go out and shoot minus 28 on a weekend at a classic golf course? Who's going to be really upset? Like, oh, we got to add another 300 yards to Augusta. Well, Jordan shot minus 20 this
week.
Yeah,
I mean, if length was the only factor, I mean, but it's way different as far as, I mean, Erin Hills, you know, obviously when Brooks Koepka won at Erin Hills, everybody freaked out as far as how low the score was, but the wind didn't blow that week. And I mean, I did an interview with Michael Herds and the architect just like 2 weeks later, and he just, you know, he was as disappointed as anyone. But, you know, they set up a golf course that was for the wind that would happen 96% of the time, and it didn't, and they shot low. Well, they should. They're the best players in the world. So it's all the other conditions that come into play there. And really, you know, I've yet to go to a golf tournament where fans are sitting, you know, watching and going, oh, I can't wait to watch a bogey, or I can't wait to watch a par.
Oh, there was too many birdies this
week. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know what? They don't sit there and go, ooh and awe if somebody bashes a drive 210 off the tee.
No.
Right? You know, you're saying about, you know, tour level, and then you're also saying, you know, for the average person, it needs to be, it's entertainment as well. And really, if we look at, you know, the RNA has done a distance report, and they've gone and they've studied the last 4 years, or they've come out with four reports where they've gone back and they've looked at the statistics on 7 major tours around the world, but they've also looked at the average distance for the average player as well. And in the UK in 2018, the average male was hitting at 215 yards. And the average female was hitting at 148. So are you telling me you want to go out and rob yardage from those people who are the ones that are, they're the ones playing the game?
Exactly. Like
they're the biggest component of the people playing the game, not the professionals, the average player.
No, and our producer, Nick, he's one of those average players that doesn't play nearly as much as us. like, Nick, would you actually want to go out and play if you've all of a sudden you've lost 20 yards off your game the three rounds you get in the summer?
No, I mean, I'm going to take every advantage I can get. So if you can give me a ball, it's going to give me an extra 25 yards.
You're looking on Amazon for the balls that go further.
Right.
Imagine you can't even get those. So I agree with you 100%. And you nailed it. For my take is the same as you around basketball, is that I remember Steve Kerr when they were like, is this team better than the Golden State Warriors? Is this team better than the 96 Bulls or that team that won all those championships? And I remember Steve he said something, and I'm paraphrasing, but he's like, oh yeah, no, sports actually get worse and people actually get worse and our athletes are somehow worse than they were 20 years ago. And that's my thought on the golf game as well. Is like, not only is the ball, it might be going further, you really can't do the
that's what I was going to say. Can you really do a comparison there?
No, because
it's a completely different game.
You can compare the two golf balls, sure.
Yeah.
But if you look from way back then, they didn't have swing coaches. They didn't have TrackMan. They didn't have the
technology wasn't there.
Yeah, no. And a lot of them didn't have the time to literally spend the amount of time doing it on the range. A lot of the guys on the PGA Tour back then also had jobs, you know, some of them, right? So I just think it's a ridiculous thing to make the game harder.
They have limits in place. You know, the USGA, RNA, Golf Canada, these governing bodies, they have rules in place. Basically, everybody's working with technology and everything they can't get past them, but they can work within them as much as possible to maximize what they can get out of them. But beyond that, you know, they're going to get to a limit. And in a sense, is it changing how people are enjoying things? I mean, no offense to the architect geeks that are worried about, you know, certain golf courses, you know, coming out of play and not being able to take the PGA Tour. Frankly, most golf courses come out of play for professional events because of logistics around the event, not because the golf course is too short. I mean, you know, trying to fit a golf course, I mean, the U.S. Open at Marion, trying to fit in all the corporate tents and everything in a place there, it's near impossible. So the tour doesn't play the best golf courses. They play the stadiums where you can get people into, you can sell tickets, people can have good spectator views. It's not about classic golf on the tour. And those are the guys who need, and the women that need the longer golf courses. So, you know, it's trying to worry too much about a small percentage of the game and wanting to change the rules around that. It just doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, I think similar to what we talked about last week with JB Holmes walking around the green for a minute and a half, I view it the same way. If I'm turning on golf and I'm just the average fan, I don't want to see a guy making a hard par. That does not entertain me. I want to see a guy that's putting up birdies. They're shooting, you know, 8 under par in a round, and he's going out shooting lights out. That's what entertains people. Yes, we all love watching that U.S. Open. Once a year is great. When they are struggling to make par and they're getting real creative, that's once a year is awesome. But for the week in February, we got the Honda Classic coming up. Making that golf course super, super hard, I don't see benefiting anybody.
Here's the thing. I mean, you know, we've got a guest coming up that fits in perfectly here. When I go over to Scotland and play golf courses, it's the interest of the golf course that matters. Not going over there to play 7,200-yard golf courses. Where the Scottish Open is this year, Renaissance Club is, you know, a little bit more modern. It's a long, long golf course. But, you know, that's not where the interest is. I mean, North Berwick, their West Links, it's probably my favorite golf course in the world. It's 6,500 yards long, max. But it's as hard a golf course to play as anything you'll ever find. So length is not the only factor. You've got to hit shots. You've got to be smart. Weather comes into play. There's the beauty of the golf course, the creativity of, you know, even the hazards. There's a lot more to things than just the length. And even having the advantage of a longer ball to play that, I still got to do a lot of special things in order to score well. And if you look at the scoring average in that same time period where they're tracking all the distance, it's not coming down by that much. It's not like everybody is all of a sudden shooting in the 50s here.
No. Still, 59 is still one of the most rarest things on tour. I don't see that changing. And if we had a couple more each year, would it be the worst thing ever?
No, not at all. Again, it goes back to our discussion right at the start. You know, it's entertainment at the professional level. We want to see the players play well. And for the average golf fan going out and playing their golf course, they're not on the back tees. Their average golf course at home is not coming out of play because of the length of the golf ball. They probably got a lot more other things to worry about than just, you know, hitting driver off the tee. And, you know, they can travel and go to lots of interesting golf courses and don't have to play the back tee boxes. And they don't need, in a lot of cases, they can go and play 6,000 yards or less and still have a great time.
Absolutely. And I'm going to tell a quick story about having a great time with Nick golfing one time. We were playing a course just up in Brighton called Timber Ridge. And second hole, there's houses along the right, but you wouldn't even think they're in play. They're that far right. And the one...
Are you going to roast Nick?
Oh, absolutely. So, and it gets worse. It gets worse. So the first hole, you know, it's a nice course. Nick hasn't been playing that long. It's a super nice course for him.
For sure. I
love Timber.
Yeah.
First hole, probably a struggle. Might have hit double digits on the par five opening, so he's a little bit frustrated.
Seven putt or something? That's a pretty tough green.
I don't know. It's always a seven putt.
It was,
okay, all right.
For me.
His putting's terrible. So we get up to the second hole, and he somehow sees these houses on the right. He's like, those houses are in play. I was like, they're not in play. You couldn't even hit your ball straight at them and hit them. That's how far out of the play they are. And there's an above ground pool in the one backyard, about in the middle of fairway. And somehow Nick lands it in the middle of that pool on our second hole of the day. I'm like, oh god, this is gonna be an interesting day.
It's gonna be a long day.
We go through, we have a good time, we get some beers into him, he turns it around. We're leaving the golf course and he actually drove us there. And for some reason he's mapped out this house in on the way. And this guy, he's like, I gotta get my ball.
Come on.
He pulls over in front of the house and me and our buddy Chris are sitting in the car like, what? And he runs to the backyard. Golf ball wasn't in the pool anymore. He's all pissed he couldn't get his golf ball out of the backyard.
Well, I mean, if they did reduce the golf ball distance by 15%,
you wouldn't reach the pool.
Maybe it would work out for you or whatever.
There's our argument. But but that's entertainment, right?
I do play better with beer, though.
That's true.
There you go. Well, a lot of people do. And again, it's about entertainment. It's about enjoyment. And, you know, it's the whole game is not predicated around just bashing the ball a long distance. I mean, we all like to do it. That's for sure. But just because the most elite players in the world are hitting it a long, long way, that doesn't really change it for the rest of us.
Speaking of the elite players, our guest this week gets to work with those elite players week in, week out. Scotty, why don't you tell the listeners who we have this week?
Yeah, Rue McDonald is a young man from Scotland, Aberdeen, who is part of the social media team for the European Tour. Fantastic guy, and we caught up with him just after he came back from Mexico City at his home in Aberdeen. And he's got a neat background, a neat story, and I think everybody's going to enjoy hearing what got him to the European Tour social media team.
Yeah, that was a great interview. It's highly entertaining. Great guy. Stick around for some scotch recommendations at the end, and we're going to send it over to Rue McDonald right about now.
All right. We want to welcome in Rue McDonald here. Rue is a member of the European Tour social media team. How are you today, Rue?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on, guys. It's late over here, but I'm looking forward to chatting with you guys.
Just to let our listeners know, Rue is joining us here from Aberdeen, Scotland, and he's just returned from the WGC Mexico Championship, so he might be a little sleepy. So, go easy on him here as we drill him with a lot of questions about not only being on the European Tour social media team, but, you know, how that came about, and also his background as well, and what led up to the European social media team membership.
Yeah, Rue, why don't you give us a rundown of your story there? How'd you end up on this the European Tour social media team is one of the best ones out there. How'd you end up on that team?
Yeah, well, first of all, I feel lucky to be on the team. I think it's an exciting, it's a job that I doesn't feel like a job. It's one that I'm excited to go into work every day and be around some great players, but, you know, great personalities and great people. I think a lot of the way I got the job was through my own hard work. I sort of grew up in an age where I was around social media and it was very much part of the culture growing up through high school and into university. I was sort of studying communications and public relations. A lot of that was around social media and the emergence of Twitter and Facebook. So I started my own podcast. I started my own online presence. I became a very early influencer in this sort of golf tourism space here in Scotland. That's how me and Scott connected. And through that, I managed to get myself some freelance work. That freelance work led me to take part in the Scottish Open in 2016 and work alongside the European Tour social media team. And 6 months later, they got in touch saying there was a job. So it was a kind of long road, and it was never a kind of, it was never the end goal to kind of work, say, with the European Tour, but I'm kind of happy how it all worked out, and I'm enjoying it. I'm coming up to my 2-year anniversary next month, so it's flown by.
It doesn't hurt to have a nice Scottish accent to get in the golf industry. Usually an easy in, eh?
Yeah, well, they have a phrase at the European Tour: the Scots are taking over. So we have a good clan of Scots in the tour. So yeah, it's great.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about the team? Obviously, there's a lot of consumers that, you know, that follow the European social media. You guys have been killing it with some amazing videos, great content. Why don't you tell us what the structure of the team is, how many people are involved, and maybe how you go about planning what you're going to put out?
Yeah, it's first of all, I think people are surprised at just how small the team is. We have about 10 of us that go to the tournaments, and of the 10, at some of the bigger tournaments, there's maybe representation of 4 or 5 of us at the event itself, and then a couple of people on cover from home. A lot of the big ideas come from, it's almost a collaboration between traditional broadcast and people that have came from a traditional background in TV, and then new minds sort of in the social digital space. So there's really a working group of about 7 people. Some people that do the tournaments week to week, some people that do TV, some people that work with the players, and it's sort of a mix and bowl of all that, and it's strategic. Only today we were on a call planning for the whole year, so a lot of the ideas, the planning takes place now, and they're planning a lot of it around the players' time and what events they'll be at. So the wheels are very much in motion for the rest of the year, and sort of continue the momentum that my colleagues have built up over the last sort of three years.
One of the things I've always loved about your social media team is the videos that Scott touched on before. You have a lot of videos of guys sitting on a hole, just attempting to get a hole in one. He's sitting there all day. How do you guys come up with these ideas? Because they are amazing, they're hilarious, and extremely entertaining.
Yeah, the ideas, I guess that comes from a Canadian who's at the top of the company. Keith Pelly believes that we're an entertainment business, and he certainly has changed the culture at the tour that, you know, I've only known it under Keith's regime. So it's one that is sort of encouraging ideas. No idea is a bad idea. And so he's very much infused that philosophy in us all. And it's just a case of that working group. They have some key principles around videos, whether it's sort of sentimental videos, whether it's funny, whether it's the challenges. And the guys in that working group sort of come together a little bit more than every quarter, and they spitball ideas. And we seem to be on a good run at the moment, and certainly have some good stuff planned.
Well, what you touched on there is actually, we've talked about a lot on this podcast about golf being an entertainment industry. We touched on the AT&T just a few weeks ago being more of an entertainment type of tournament. And just last weekend was the WGC, which you were at. And I caught myself watching a lot of this tournament. I thought it was very entertaining, a little bit of a different golf course as well. You were on the grounds. Why don't you tell us about how that week was?
Yeah, it's actually my second visit to Mexico and Chapultepec, Mexico City, and it had a very European vibe to the golf course. It felt like almost a hybrid between one of the great weeks on the European Tour is when we go to Switzerland and we go to Crans, Montana. It almost felt like it was Switzerland meets a classic Italian golf course. Despite that, I don't think there's been a European winner of that championship for several years, but it was it's always a favorite week of the year. We get looked after very well. We stay in the players' hotel. We're around the players, and the players are all pretty relaxed. It's a 72-man field. I think the last place check was something like $48,000. So
that's,
it wasn't
that's tough, eh? To just take home. Yeah. I could come in last for that money.
Yeah, and so it's always a good week, and a week that we try and get there and capture some content, because we know that a lot of our top European players are now going to be in the States for the next few months. So it's quite a busy week, quite a demanding week, but one that certainly one of my favorite weeks of the year.
Now, you do have a lot of interaction with the players, as you said, and I noticed today, or noticed this week, actually following your social media, you might have had interaction with a certain Tiger Woods, maybe in an elevator. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that? I didn't get the whole story from your social media, but I'd like to hear it.
Yeah, so obviously the European Tour hasn't had the privilege of having Mr. Woods on our tour, and obviously he's focusing on playing in America. I was at Carnoustie when he made that run on the back nine on when he made the back nine run at Carnoustie on Sunday. I had the privilege of being there, but the first time I was really at an event with Woods on his return, and just by coincidence he was in the Players Hotel, and I was coming down for the evening, and the elevator opened to my horror, only Tiger Woods was standing there. So I'm sure I was in sort of, there can't be many people in the world that have shared 20 seconds in an elevator alone with Tiger Woods, but he greeted me, he said hello. I froze.
He obviously knew who you were, right?
Well, I definitely knew who he was, so I kind of jaw wide open sort of said hi. And I was sort of joking with my colleagues, if I ahead of last week, I was saying, if I see Tiger Woods in the gym or something, I'm going to go up to him and speak to him, because I'm a huge golf nerd, and obviously I've got a professional relationship with a lot of the players, but I think I would sort of go up to him and thank him for all he's done in golf. And when that moment happened and we were alone in that lift for about 20 seconds, I didn't say anything, so I'm kicking myself a little bit. as the elevator went down from the 24th floor down to the ground floor, it stopped a couple more times.
Were those because you pushed a couple extra buttons just to relive this? Oops, no, wrong floor. No, that's not it either. Sorry, Mr. Woods.
Yeah, it was funny though, because every time someone walked in the lift, they did the same reaction I had, but they sort of spoke out loud. All my thoughts were internal, but Matt Wallace's caddy walked in the lift and spoke out loud and said, "Oh my God, Tiger Woods!" And the three of us laughed. I sort of turned around and said, "Yeah, that's what I thought." And then down another floor in walked the hotel general manager, who thanked Mr. Woods for staying there and was very gushing. So I think Mr. Woods probably thought I was the coolest guy in the lift of the three of us. So Mr. Woods got out of the first floor. I was going down to the ground floor. He actually asked if I wanted to go in front of him. I said, "No, I'm actually going down to the ground floor." And yeah, that's the first interaction, I hope, of a few more with Tiger Woods. But yeah, he by all accounts, he wouldn't have done that back in his peak back in the 2000s. He wouldn't have probably engaged with any sort of pleasantries, but so certainly from what I've seen, he's far more engaging and just, you know, certainly polite to be around.
Well, you might not know Mr. Woods that well yet, but obviously, you know, being around the other players, who have you gotten to know a little bit more in the last 2 years? Are there players that, you know, you talk to more than others, or how do those relationships work?
I think naturally you're around the guys who have a lot more media involved in their day-to-day tour lives. Guys that do well, obviously, are in demand. I was lucky enough to be at the Ryder Cup, so I've built relationships with almost everybody in the European Ryder Cup team to a point. Even people like Rory McIlroy might not be on first name terms, but he would be polite enough to sort of smile and say hi and understand.
Oh, he'd be
role.
Like, "Oh, you're the elevator guy."
Yeah, this reputation going. But yeah, certainly people like him, they would certainly recognize my face and understand what I'm doing and why I've got a camera near them. But probably on a more personal level, I've got to know people like Tommy Fleetwood quite well, and he's always quite relaxed, and he's out for dinner with some of my colleagues, so we always kind of at events maybe share an evening together in sort of mutual friend company, and then through that I've built up a good relationship with him. And people like Alex Norin, another guy, and a lot of the sort of maybe middle tier European tour guys that are certainly on our tour a lot more and sort of don't hybrid across the two tours. So all the English guys, Tyrrell Hatton being another one, Matt Wallace, Eddie Pepperell. But I would say that a lot of the European players or members of the European Tour have a lot of the success of our social media. Probably most of the success comes through them and their ability to A, trust us, and B, sort of commit to these ideas and feel willing to take part. And without the players, we have a philosophy at the Tour that the players come first. So without the players and their buy-in and their time, none of it would be possible. So a lot of credit has to go to the players.
Speaking of Eddie Pepperell there, that guy is quite a character himself. Do you have any good stories about him? He's obviously famous for getting a little too drunk the night before his round with Phil Mickelson there. I'm sure you've had a few run-ins with him with your time on the tour.
Yeah, and it was actually his birthday the week of Dubai just last month. And we all know that Eddie likes his dog, Gus, who's a Vizsla. And we thought, yeah, that he obviously he's very fond of his dog. He always talks about his dog. So I got in touch with his girlfriend and we arranged a nice video filming his dog on his artificial indoor putting green, which actually touched Eddie. He was quite emotional watching the video and sort of showing a softer side to Eddie. But he's certainly a very intelligent guy and one who understands the importance of social media and who gets it. Well, we're still looking forward to the day that he takes over our Twitter account for a day. That could be quite interesting. but for the bit of social media that we've done recently, the content committee, he played obviously a star role in that. And he was one of the scenes shows him beeping out, coming up with some sort of crazy idea. And I can assure everybody who watched that the beeps were certainly needed. He was reading a script that would not only end his career, but would probably take down the European Tour. It was a pretty X-rated script, which made the whole thing even funnier to the people who wrote it. So he's a very good actor and a very good player, and one who certainly is going to be around for a long time.
That's amazing. I know one player that you've had a little bit of a different relationship with was Henrik Stenson, and you got to play with him in a Pro-Am. Is that right? Back in, was that 2016?
Yeah, that was before my tour days. Actually, at the tour now, people would sort of laugh and mock a member of staff taking a picture with a player, because it's obviously you're working on a professional level. But my my Twitter picture now is still that picture from the 2016 Scottish Open at Castle Stewart, where I was working on behalf of Castle Stewart. I was doing their social media for the week, and as a little thank you from them, I got a spot in the Pro-Am to play alongside him. And if you remember 2016, and the Scottish Open was in the summer of 2016, and it was a week before he went on to win the Open at Royal Troon. So it was quite amazing to think back there that I was watching somebody who was in the sort of mold of the Open champion, and was very much, as anyone can imagine, Henrik Stenson is a very personable guy, but he was with his caddy Lordy. He was working very hard on his game. He was walking behind us, he was dropping multiple balls, and he was really working hard and playing well. So it was no surprise to see me see him do well the following week, but a pretty cool memory to sort of take with me, and I've brought that up with him since then. But yeah, he's one of the great characters we have on our tour, and certainly a memory that I'll cherish.
Well, you can take a little bit of a credit for that Open Championship, I guess, or even a little bit of it, right?
A little bit, yeah. Certainly, it wasn't lost on my friends that I played with him the week before, and I made everyone aware of it when he was lifting the claret jug that he played with me the week before. But certainly delighted for him, and I'm sure he's not finished yet. I think he's obviously missed a few cuts recently, but a guy who's probably working as hard as he ever has on his game, and as I said, a great character and a great asset to the tour.
What was it like seeing him hit that 3-wood up close and personal?
we've done plenty of videos on 3-wood. We've had compilations. We actually are planning about a 10-minute video on our YouTube channel of just Henrik Stenson 3-woods, which might have to be explicit ratings on that, because it's certainly enjoyable to see him hit his 3-wood. But yeah, I That was probably the one thing that got me in it, was the ability for him to, his ball striking on the day was phenomenal. And I think he went around Castle Stewart on the pro-am day, maybe 5-under, 6-under, and that was him putting poorly. So, yeah, certainly was playing well. And on that same day, he actually took part in a European Tour video, which obviously I was oblivious to, not working with the tour at that point. But he was playing the 200-yard putt, if you remember. Some of the guys took part in. So it was obviously pre my European Tour career, but it was cool to see how they were filming that and how the players took part and how they were so willing to take part. But if I was to throw a question over to you guys, obviously in Canada, how keen are you guys to watch the European Tour, and what are your kind of thoughts on not only the tour and the broadcast, but some of the other stuff that we do?
Well, I think obviously we have that Canadian connection with Keith Pelly. So anybody that's familiar with that, you know, has a little bit of connection with the tour. I think the social media has certainly dragged a few extra fans in, and it's certainly gotten more Canadians to pay attention to the tour. We, you know, having players like Austin Connolly out there will bring some attraction to us. But, you know, you've got more and more of the stars that are there, and some of that are returning to obviously try and get points to make sure they can make Ryder Cup teams. We certainly watch it early in the morning. I think I can say that, you know, Stefan can say for himself as far as how much European Tour he watches. But, you know, it's nice to catch it first thing in the morning, and it's certainly an entertaining brand of golf.
I definitely pick it up more closer to the Open, obviously, just see who's out in the field. And in the mornings, Saturday, Sunday morning, it's always nice to catch the end of the tournament. But Scotty nailed it on the head there, that the social media, and I'm not just here tooting your own horn, without that social media team going purely for entertainment and just getting viewers in, I don't think it would be have the appeal it does at this point.
Well, that's great to hear. Yeah, and yeah, you mentioned Austin Connolly there. Hopefully, we definitely see more Canadians coming over, and North Americans. I think Brooks Koepka and Peter Uihlein have sort of shown guys that you know, instead of the web.com, are pursuing, you know, the PGA, other PGA tours around the world, that the European Tour is a great way to see the world. That's one of the great perks of my job, is being able to travel what is really a world tour. Being lucky enough to just be in Mexico last week, but also going to places like Australia and China and the Middle East. And yeah, it's really, we're lucky enough to be able to follow the sun until July, when we're having to go to Scotland for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I think players are really finding that's a new path for them. I know I've got some friends now that are playing even like the MENA Tour, and they're trying to work their way up to the Challenge Tour and possibly up to the European Tour. So, you know, it's a great path for them. Obviously, the PGA Tour is a crowded one and very difficult to get on. So, yeah, if there's that opportunity there, they're certainly looking at it now. Like you said, with Peter Uihlein and Brooks Koepka showing that there's a definite path there.
Also, yeah. I'll watch as much golf as Paul Casey's on the TV. I'm a big Paul Casey guy. Anytime I can see his forearms on the TV, I'm throwing that on.
Well, he was definitely the story last weekend, if you remember, his caddy, Johnny Longsox, was reading yardages off the Puerto Rico Open, which was the same week as the Mexico Open. So he was 3-under through three holes with the wrong yardages, which was pretty impressive.
You know you might be replaceable when.
Exactly. Yeah. He actually spends a lot of his time in America, but when he is over, yeah, it's pretty impressive to see how he goes about his business, and how he hasn't won as much as you know, certainly in the States, hasn't won as much as you might think he does, given how many good rounds he has.
Now, this year, obviously, the Scottish Open is coming to Scotland and the Renaissance Club, and the women's are going to be there as well. I mean, what's it mean to you to see it go there? I mean, I know you're familiar with that facility, correct?
I am, yeah. And it's sort of with a heavy heart, it's going to Renaissance, because my home club, Cruden Bay, which I think Scotland will be familiar with, that was very much in line to take the Scottish Open this year. It's obviously funded by the National Tourism Body Visit Scotland, and their ambition was to take it around around Scotland and showcase different regions in Scotland. And with another backer of the tournament, the main sponsor, Aberdeen Standard Investments, their merger with Standard Life meant that they wanted to keep it down in the Edinburgh region. So sort of did a whole U-turn on potentially coming to Cruden Bay in my home course. But Renaissance is a great course. It's located just a couple miles down the street from North Berwick, which again Scott will be familiar with, and Gullin, where they had it last year. So it's a Tom Doak designed golf course. It's a very high-end luxury experience with spectacular views, and from what I'm hearing early on, it's going to have a really strong field again this year. And it's a great way that, you know, a lot of the American players come over and prepare for the Open, you know, the week before. And people like Patrick Reed and Ricky Fowler are always keen, and Phil Mickelson always keen to support the event. So probably the strongest event of our year if you look at the sort of players that come over. And it's probably not a pure links golf course. The turf is very linksy, but the greens are a little bit undulated in parts. But as I say, I think it's going to be a good test prior to the Open.
Yeah, it's a difficult golf course. I'm very interested to see how long the rough is going to be. When I was there in 14, it was pretty much waist high in some areas. So I think at that point they were trying to get the Scottish Open there then and didn't at that point. But it can certainly be difficult if a player gets offline.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Somewhere like Castle Stewart does well. They obviously they manage the rough. They sort of look to have wispy, thin rough. If you've got the resource to do that, I think that that's certainly the best practice. And I remember, you know, people are thinking links course, they're not thinking trees, but expect to see lots of trees at Renaissance, certainly on the front nine.
We'd be remiss not to bring up, you have your own podcast out there, the Scottish Golf Podcast. Why don't you tell listeners about your podcast there, Roo?
Yeah, it's a little bit dormant at the moment, just given how much travel I'm doing. But I do intend to fire it back up. So prior to getting the job with the European Tour, I had this podcast, basically inspiring and educating golfers who have an interest of coming to Scotland and playing golf, very much with a golf tourism focus. So I was having guys, whether it was authors or golf professionals, or people that worked in the golf industry here, coming and sharing their knowledge of the industry, and also people that come and travel to Scotland. Scott was over on a trip, and we spoke about his trip, and I've had other people come over, come onto the podcast and relive their experiences, which help inspire and also educate people about planning their trip. So hopefully there's plenty of Canadians out there with aspirations to come visit.
Obviously, when many Canadians, Americans head over there, the first thought is to go to St. Andrews. Let's say St. Andrews doesn't make sense money-wise or just isn't the place to go. Where else? What's a hidden gem for people to go where they can play multiple different courses, great town, and where would you recommend?
If I could choose one trip, I would be choosing the Highlands. So you'd want to go and play Royal Dornoch. And if you drive up to Royal Dornoch, you could mistake yourself for being in the Rockies. It's you close your eyes and you think of Scotland, and then you open them, and then it's exactly how you think it would look in that part of Scotland. It's mountains, it's lochs, it's rivers, it's beautiful colours. There's whiskey up there if that's the way you like to spend your time. So I would go for Royal Dornoch and the Scottish Highlands, and you can fly into Inverness Airport. And you can play Castle Stewart, you can play Nairn, you can play Murray, you can play Fortrose, and you could have a really good, authentic Scottish experience, and you can save St. Andrews for later.
I mean, obviously, you're a member at Cruden Bay. If people are not familiar with Cruden Bay, why don't you share a little bit about it and why it's so special beyond having you as a member?
I think it's special because I just remember growing up there as a sort of 11, 12 year old, and hearing international voices, American accents, Australians, and wondering why they're playing my golf course and why they've bothered to come all this way. And as you get older and as you get a little bit wiser, you sort of appreciate what you've got. So it's an old Tom Morris golf course. It's quite young in some regards compared to some of the neighboring courses. It was laid out in 1899. By Tom Morris. Simpson then came along and did some work about 25 years later. It's people say it's more of an Irish looking golf course than it is Scottish. That we've got huge sand dunes, we play blind shots, we've got a blind par 3. It's maybe the prettiest view in Scotland is on the ninth tee, which overlooks this 3-mile beach, which I enjoy taking my dog on to every weekend. So I feel very lucky to be a member there. But as you know, there's golf for everybody here in Scotland. It's very affordable. I pay around about £600 annually to be a member there, at a top 100 golf course in the world, with an 18-hole golf course, a 9-hole golf course, a driving range facility. So I'm very lucky.
Just keep going about everything you get for £600. Just keep going.
Yeah, I feel very lucky, and yeah, your guys are welcome anytime you come over. It's a public golf course. We have public tee times. We have around about 7,500 visitor rounds a year, which is quite low. But yeah, we have a pretty good offering here.
You got to be careful with me. If you say come for something free, I will show up.
You might end up on your couch.
Yeah, I might ask for a job at the end of it too. How's your game nowadays? I know you're obviously traveling more. How does your game travel with the travel?
It doesn't travel. It stays in Scotland. Yeah, just given the way we work, it's sort of fly Monday and then you're straight at it at the golf course Tuesday morning. And yeah, it's head down till Sunday night, and then you want to, given that we travel about 20 weeks a year, you're not really tagging on extra days for golf. I think I've only managed to play one round of golf since I joined the tour during a working week, and that was at King's Barnes, actually, at the Dunhill Links. So it wasn't a bad place to play.
Not a bad spot at all, that's for sure.
But yeah, it's certainly not, I haven't got the habit of playing golf. In fact, I lie. I went over to the US Open last year and I played a couple of rounds in New York on Long Island. So I've certainly brought the clubs round with me for that one. Played Friar's Head. That was a great
experience. Terrible golf course. Terrible golf course.
And then I played Maidstone, also a terrible golf course.
Okay, about time to wrap it up for you rubbing it in.
But yeah, I haven't played much golf, but I very much love my time at home and playing links golf here in Scotland on my days off.
Well, fabulous, Rue. We really appreciate having you on. Where can people track you down? I know, obviously, European Tour on Twitter. You still keep active as far as Instagram, Twitter on your own stuff? Or how's that work for you?
Well, you can follow me personally on Instagram and Twitter at Rue MacDonald. So that's R-U MacDonald, the Scottish way, M-A-C. And then, keep a track of our content on the European Tour across all the platforms, including YouTube. We're doing some good stuff on YouTube at the moment with some longer form highlights. So if you can't watch the day's play, given the time differences, we get almost 50% of our viewership is from North America on our YouTube channel. So people are enjoying watching day highlights and player round highlights on there. So and then, of course, the Scottish Golf Podcast will be back up and running very soon on my Instagram page, which is over 12,000 followers. Hopefully will inspire you to make the trip to Scotland.
We will be over there. And before we do, we need one last recommendation. If we're going to the store today, we're buying a Scottish whiskey, what should we be picking up?
Well, I drink craft beer, so I'm not much use. I've still got very raw and young taste buds. I can't stand the whiskey at the moment. I'm from the Speyside region, so look for a Speyside whiskey.
Don't worry. When we try to drink scotch and record the podcast, we have to cancel everything because Scott goes AWOL. So we appreciate you coming on, Rue. For all the listeners out there, make sure you follow him on all the social media accounts he listed. Just before, thanks again. We look forward to meeting you in the future. You have a great day and get to bed. You need some rest after a long, long week in Mexico.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Rue. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Rue MacDonald, for that great interview. We'll have to have him on again. Everybody check out the Scottish Golf Podcast, as we mentioned many times on there, if you want to hear some more funny stories and where to go when you're in Scotland. Obviously, one of the funniest stories that came out of there was his experience with Tiger Woods in an elevator at the WGC. I made a joke to him that he pushed all the buttons, but I think that's maybe what I would have done.
I totally would have done that.
Yeah, I'd be right there with you.
It's just really...
I'd just be rolling my hand down those numbers.
Yeah, and then he just like chokes you out, and then he walks out, and you're just you're just a body bag in the corner.
I have to say, the first time I got to really get up close with Tiger, or at least, you know, sit eye to eye with him, Yeah, I was kind of nervous. It was kind of a, but I will say it was a sweaty handshake. I don't know.
Looks like a sweaty guy.
But I don't know if it was sweaty on my hand or sweaty on his hand.
Oh, you were sweaty. Yeah.
I don't know, but we're in New York. It was a vapor event. It was when he was injured, I think 2014.
When Rory switched over, right?
Right, yeah. Exactly. And so Rory was there that week as well. And what was funny about it was we were at this event. He had, just done the Jimmy Fallon show, and he and Rory were there that night, do a little debut. It was at Liberty National in New Jersey. It was neat. It was a nighttime event because they had the vapor golf balls and kind of the glowing look to it. It was against the Manhattan skyline. It was pretty wicked. They had a ferry that went back. Probably it was like 1 o'clock in the morning when they finished doing interviews, and it was a late night. They did, I think, the ice bucket challenge that night. That's the time period you're talking about. But the next day we had all these product knowledge sessions that were going on with Nike, and we're at the hotel, and you know, we're broken off into different rooms and stuff, and we'd expected a few players to be there. It was Nick Watney and things like that, but we figured by that time
Paul Casey.
But we'd figured by that time that, you know, Rory and Tiger had probably a jetted by then, right? So we get to go over to this one room, and I get this frantic text from a buddy that was, you know, another media outlet guy, and he's like, hey, Tiger's coming your way. He's coming down your way. So all I'm thinking is like, okay, I better be right at the front here, just in case. You never know. I mean, it wasn't a big room, but, you know, I wanted to set up a camera and do some stuff or whatever. So I sat down front row, and you know, I go in, and it's like, oh, okay, we got a few guys, you know, from the company, and tell us about wedge grinds and stuff like this. And I'm thinking, oh, well, it's not really happening. And then all of a sudden it's, hey guys. And here's Tiger walking in the back room, sits down in the empty chair that's right across the table, like as close as you and I right now, which is only like, you know, 3-4 feet. And he just sat there and started talking about, you know, getting involved with golf clubs and all sorts of stuff. And, you know, it was funny because it sort of felt like a one-on-one conversation. I videotaped the whole thing because it was already set up and ready to go. And I think it's still cramming YouTube hits to this day. So
there really is an aura about him. And if anyone's ever been to a golf tournament where he's been at, it's, you can tell when they're coming, they talk about the crowds changing when he shows up. And the only experience, I was at the PGA Championship, I think it was 2013 that they had it in Rochester at Oak Hill.
Yep.
And so we were there on a Saturday, the first 2 days. It's the first par 5, 6, 5, doesn't matter. Nobody cares. And he hits it. He's hit it right both days. So we get there pretty early. I was like, let's just hang out here. He hit it here the first 2 days. He plays a fade. The miss is going to be right. And he ended up hitting it. It couldn't have been more than 15 feet away from us. So we're obviously standing right there. The whole crowd comes up. And he's 10 feet away from me about to hit a shot, and he just pointed at me, and I was like, oh God. And
what did I do?
It was just like a slight, he doesn't make eye contact, but it was just like a slight point over at me. And then Joe LaCava is his caddy, and he's like, hey, you black hat or whatever, back it up. And I was the guy
in his eye line.
Yeah. Right. In his eye line. So obviously he recognized me from being the 2014. Wait, it was 2013.
Yeah. So he knew that
he
you
knew
were
my
going
potential.
To, yeah.
From that very moment that I should have been, I could have fit him, and he could have won. Yeah. 2014 fair of the year. But, that was my only story. My
Magic.
Only time I've been
three
near Tiger, but, the aura, as I mentioned, once he showed up, it was about, we were maybe, I said, 7, 8 people on this hole.
Yeah.
At that point, you know, you're 5, 6, 7, 8 people deep. It's early. He was nowhere near the top of the tournament, so he was teeing off super early, and it's a whole different experience around him.
Yeah, the year that obviously he had a monster year in 2000, I think I was down at the Disney tournament. And that was one of the ones where I really saw his impact of that year. You know, obviously you go and cover him, see him in some events and stuff, and people are watching, and, you know, he's the guy or whatever. But that year in 2000 at Disney, first thing was I felt bad for everybody on the range because he's warming up on the range. And here's what happens. I mean, everybody knows exactly where the story is going. He warms up on the range. He gets ready to head to the tee. Where does everybody else go? Like, they had a grandstand set up. They're gone. So everybody else is warming up, and there's nobody there.
Jim Furyk walks up after you. Hey.
Nothing. You know, yeah. Yeah. It's like dust bunnies.
You guys let anybody in today?
Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, really for anyone else, when you're on the golf course, the experience of people having gone and watched him in a tournament is that you know, you've got to be like three holes ahead and then wait for the crowd to come to you.
That's what we did.
Yeah. And that's exactly what you have to do, because if you're going to try to fight through that crowd, I mean, if people watch the Tour Championship last year, I mean, he was the Pied Piper coming up, you know, the fairways.
That
there.
Was such a cool
It was crazy at East Lake.
It reminded me of the old tournaments you would see when everyone was allowed to just walk up the fairway, because, you know, people weren't as screwed up in the world. You could trust people to walk up
the
fairway.
Yeah, for the Open Championship, you know, pull the rope, let the people come up. And I mean, yeah, it's really cool for the people to have. And that's one of the best things about professional golf, is that fans get an up-close experience and get to be near these athletes a lot more than they would in other sports. And that's part of the magic of watching a professional event.
Yeah, the moral of the story I got from that is, if you ever go to a tournament, just hang out in an elevator, you're going to run into somebody.
Probably. Yeah.
That's all I got.
We might have to do a whole episode on elevator stories.
Elevators. Oh, we can get a
elevators or hotel stories.
We can get a guy that talks about how they work.
No.
You get an interview with the elevator guy.
Oh, the elevator guy from SNR.
He would probably have some stories.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, hey, I'd take the elevator guy from WGC Mexico. I bet you they've got stories. Yeah.
Scott, you actually had an amazing tweet at Flagstick on Twitter about Tiger's trends over the last couple weeks. What's been happening with Tiger? Where are you projecting it? You have a little bit of a theory here.
Well, I was digging through some of the PGA Tour notes that their crack media staff sent out, and I was kind of looking at a trend that was in there, and the fact that Tiger's had three starts this year. He started with a T20 at the Farmers Insurance Open, followed that up with a T15, and now he finished T10 at WGC Mexico. He's not playing Honda, but his next two starts after that are Bay Hill and the Players Championship. So
we're on Scotty's gambling corner. Bet on Tiger at the Players.
I mean, as I said in the tweet, if only it worked that way. 20, 15, 10, 5th. First at the Players? Who knows? It might happen. So let's keep an eye for that going ahead into the season. We've got a few weeks to...
First at the Players? I'm Ron Burgundy.
First at the Players. We'll see. We'll see how that plays out.
That would be awesome. The Players is a great tournament. It's in a couple weeks. We've brought it up. We're obviously hyped to watch it. I will be in Mexico during it, so maybe they'll have it at a sports bar and I'll be... Three sheets to the wind watching Tiger pick up his 81st win.
That would be amazing. It'll be 82nd at that point. Maybe he'll win Bay Hill before that.
But your trend.
Okay, so Tiger, don't win Bay Hill, win the Players, have that as your 81st, make my prediction come true.
Yeah.
Thanks, Tiger.
That would work. That'd
be good.
That would be a great parlay. I wonder what numbers you could get on that. Top five and then a first for Tiger in two tournaments in a row. We have to call Dez. He's got a bookie for us. Yeah, he's got a bookie for us, that's for sure.
There we go.
One of the funnier stories that Rue brought up, and we were going to touch on it over the weekend, was Paul Casey's caddy. I bring up Paul Casey all the time. I think this guy's, he's got a great golf swing and better forearms. But his caddy, as Rue mentioned, on Saturday, they were -3 through the first three holes. They went par, eagle, birdie, and that was... Yeah, par, eagle, birdie. And turns out his caddy actually was giving him the pin locations for the other tournament that was happening at the same time in Puerto Rico. How does this happen? And why would you even have that tournament? Paul Casey's never playing the Puerto Rico tournament.
The wrong round sheets. I mean, I'm not sure how they go about it right now. Maybe they just sent a big pack for the week. How he ends up with it. Did he print it out? I mean, I didn't hear the follow-up on that.
I didn't either.
Sometimes what will happen for some of the caddies is that if the tour is not getting it out to the next day, they'll see it online in some cases, and they'll print it out. So sometimes there'll be a tweet from the tournament, or some media member will get a hold of the possible pin sheet for the next day. And what they'll do is they want as much time as possible to put together their book. And they'll see that and say, hey, you know what? I'll just print it off of there. Not wait for the official pin sheet the next day. And yeah, but that's my guess. But whatever the case, it didn't really matter because, hey, he went 3-under for three holes. And yeah, so it's all right for him. To be fair, the pin locations were pretty close, actually.
That's hilarious.
When you looked at it.
Actually, you mentioned that Johnny was his Luke Donald's caddy.
Yeah.
And Lee Westwood was who I saw break the story, and Lee said, small shout out today to Paul Casey's caddy, Johnny Lonsox, -3 after three holes, and then realized he was giving Paul the pin positions for the PGA Tour event that's happening in Puerto Rico. Nice one, Johnny. And this is where Luke Donald comes in. He says, reminds me of the time I was trying out a greens book at TPC Boston, and I asked Johnny Lonsox to look at the book. He says, slightly right to left. I said, are you sure? Looks like it's going right. It went right. Turns out he was looking at the wrong hole. How does this guy have a job?
Look, because he's a great guy. He's a great caddy most of the time. So, yeah, you know what? It happens out there. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on.
Now, like, I'm looking at this thread now. I got Rich Beam here. My caddy once gave me a yardage, told me it was 92. Sand wedge, hold it. Told me after he gave me the wrong number, it was actually 78. Like,
it happens. And I
mean, we met Dez. Like, it explains a few things,
look,
I guess.
Look, it happens. I've managed a caddy a few times at a few different things. And I can tell you that one of the first things I learned was get rid of your pin sheets. Yeah. I mean, a lot of people want to keep their pin sheets. You know, they kind of keep them away and kind of have them for future reference or whatever. And I found that at one time, I believe it was actually here at the Great Waterway Classic. I was caddying for Matt McQuillan from Kingston here. And I got ready. And thankfully, I looked. I was standing on, I think it was the second hole, looking down towards the third green. And I was juggling around and had two sheets there as it was. And I looked and I'm like, something's not right here or whatever. And then I looked and I had both sheets there. I think it was the second round and the third round as well. And then I was like, oh, gee, I shouldn't even have this in here. I should just get rid of it. So it's real easy if you're, I mean, there's a lot of other details, other things that are going on. That said, you don't want that to happen too often. Otherwise, you are definitely going to be unemployed.
I love it. I think
it's always just worked out for him, though. Every single time.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it can work out, but, you know, and...
Well, the stories you don't hear are the ones that don't. True, like, true. Because the guy's not still out on tour, right? Like,
yeah, well, for sure. And I mean, there's certainly some bad yardages that are given or bad hole locations or whatever, or bad clubs. You know, I know there's been cases of... An LPGA player told me, a famous Canadian LPGA player told me a case where she had a friend that was caddying for her, and she has a number of dog head covers, number of animal head covers, kind of, you know, puppet sort of ones, and sort of got them mixed up. So when the one caddy asked, or when she asked for a certain one, she got a different club. She was trying to lay up on a par five, and instead of getting her 5 wood, she ended up with the 3 wood and ended up laying it up right into the creek. She got the wrong cover.
That was like when Nick laid it up in the pool.
Yeah, pretty much.
I wonder if she went looking for the golf ball after.
I don't know, but you know what? They're still great friends, so there you go.
And I'm still great friends with Nick as he's running the podcast. I think this is a great time to wrap it up. Let's thank all of our caddies out there. They do their best, you know, they do their best. And if I've learned anything, it's to never buy a green book from Ryan DeVoe. Not that he knows how to read one anyway. I'm just kidding. We love you, buddy. Keep killing it. If you haven't followed him yet on social media, he's killing it right now. And speaking of social media, make sure you follow T-Talk, where we can be found, at Flagstick on Instagram, at Flagstick on Twitter. And this is where we really need your help. We need you to subscribe. We need you to... What are you guys laughing at? Was that Twitter?
Twitter.
Oh, screw you guys.
And it's Flagstick.
You're keeping this in. I'm keeping
it. And it's Flagstick Golf on Instagram.
Okay, so you're doing... You better keep all this in because... Okay, at Flagstick Golf on Instagram. Did I get that right?
Correct.
At Flagstick on Twitter.
Correct.
At Steedorf on Twitter.
There you go.
Give me a follow. I actually deleted all my tweets, thank God. And this is what we really, really need from everybody. We need you to follow the podcast on any podcast place. I'm going to call it a place that you can. Subscribe to it. Download the episodes. Rate us. Subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe again. Nick, am I missing anything?
I mean, if you're going to rate us, just make sure it's the 5-star button there.
5 stars.
There's 5 stars only.
5 stars only. We really appreciate it. We want to keep bringing you content. Scotty's working hard behind the scenes. We got some big guests. Scotty, you want to tease anybody?
No.
No, I love it. Scotty's not teasing anything. Come back next week. We should have a new episode next Wednesday. Thank you for listening to T-Talk. And remember, folks, keep it out of the pool.